You are tuning into Pro Bono Perspectives, live from Brooklyn, where the city never sleeps and purpose is more than just a buzzword. Pro Bono Perspectives brings together leaders that have traveled across sectors, industries, and experiences on their path to creating change for the communities in which they live and work. And I'm your host, Danielle Holly, CEO of Common Impact, a national nonprofit that designs skills-based volunteer programs that amplify the impact of social change organizations by harnessing the talents and the skills of private sector employees. I am lucky enough to cross paths with these leaders every day through my work with Common Impact and can't wait to bring you behind the scenes to share their stories. Hi, everyone. Today, we're going to be talking about an incredibly important topic, mental health and mental health in the context of COVID-19. More than 50% of people are diagnosed with some mental health issue within their lifetime, though dealing with and supporting mental health remains stigmatized in our society. And most recently, the stress and anxiety that has been caused by COVID-19 and the resultant economic impact has exacerbated that. Today, I'm so excited to talk to Chris Ide, Vice President of Corporate and Community Partnerships at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health Foundation, CAMH, which is Canada's largest mental health teaching hospital and drives change for mental health by inspiring philanthropy that enables leading-edge care, research, and education at CAMH. We'll talk with Chris about the impact that COVID-19 has had on our mental health, what it can mean for the future, and potentially destigmatize it, and the creative ways that companies have supported virtual telehealth programs. Welcome, Chris, to the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Danielle. It's good to be here.
So tell me a little bit about what Center for Addiction and Mental Health Foundation, CAMH, does. You know, there's been a large response to COVID-19, but what is the foundation do in quote-unquote normal times?
So the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, or as we call it, CAMH, is Canada's leading mental health teaching hospital, and we're the world's leading brain science research center. CAMH operates under four pillars, if you will. So the first is in clinical services. So, you know, every year we see 40,000 plus patients, both inpatients and outpatients. We are home to Canada's only 24-hour psychiatric emergency department. Our psychiatric emergency department sees over 12,000 visitors every single year, a quarter of those being youth. So we provide care across the lifespan, so from youth all the way up to geriatric and end of life, and across the spectrum of mental health diseases and disorders, including addiction. So anxiety, depression, those common mood disorders, as well as psychosis, schizophrenia, and everything along that spectrum. We also have a world's leading brain science research center. We're home to some incredible centers of innovation, the Kremble Center for Neuroinformatics, the Azrieli Center for Neuroradiochemistry. We produce half of all the world's brain radio tracers to map the living brain, and we produce some really incredible research that goes really quickly from bench side to bedside to really help improve clinical care and outcomes for people living with mental illness. And then the two last pillars that I'll make reference of are our education pillar. So as I mentioned at the top, we are Canada's leading mental health teaching hospital. We train 25% of all Canadian psychiatrists and 50% of all Ontario psychiatrists. And then we have a big role in advocacy as well, which is our last pillar. So we advocate at all levels of government, federal, provincial, and municipal for improvements in public policy when it comes to mental health and addiction care and treatment.
And what does your work look like now in the context of COVID-19? Like, what has been so front and center is the physical impact of this disease. But from where
I sit and from Common Impact's work, we've just heard a significant increase in mental health needs of people, of the organizations that support those individuals, and just general citizens who are dealing with this. So curious how you've thought about that.
Yeah, it's been a privilege. So I work at the foundation, and our role at the foundation is to help raise money from companies or individuals to advance our hospital's vision for the future of mental health care. And before this pandemic, we knew we were in the midst of a global mental health crisis. Globally, 450 million people were struggling with mental illness. It's the leading cause of disability worldwide. And 300 of those 450 million people were affected by depression. And, you know, one of the sad facts about that, although there's known effective treatments, less than half of those who are suffering from depression receive those treatments. And there's over 47 million people globally living with dementia. And that number was projected to increase to 75 million by 2030. Wow. One of the interesting stats that recently jumped out at me was life expectancy in the U.S. And it was declining for the first time since World War II. Primarily due to alcohol and drug-related deaths, as well as deaths by suicide. So we were in the midst of a global mental health crisis before this pandemic. And what we've seen, and what I'm sure you felt, what I felt, and a lot of your listeners will have felt, is that this pandemic has really exacerbated the crisis. You know, we know that physical distancing is a really important measure to reduce the spread of COVID-19. But the isolation that we're really feeling is taking away one of the most important tools that we have for mental health management, which is social interaction. And the effects of that isolation on our mental health are really well documented too. It leads to loneliness, and loneliness can lead to anxiety, burnout, depression, addiction, and a host of other mental illnesses if not treated. So, you know, I imagine a lot of your listeners have felt similar feelings to those that I've felt around uncertainty and it being really stressful. You know, we don't know how long this new reality is going to last. Some days I'm really eager to get back to how things used to be. I am at home with my husband and two children and two dogs. As much as I love them, I love the space that work great sometimes. But other days I get really anxious about reintegrating to my old life. And I think many of us are struggling to reimagine our professional lives, whether it's leading teams from a distance or learning new technology or really balancing those family demands. There's been a lot of firsts for us. And for others, this pandemic has taken a toll on their professional lives, including their jobs and financial security, or worse, some people have tested positive or have lost their loved ones to this virus. So the negative stressors on our lives, most of which we can't control, but what I would say is, you know, what I focus on controlling are my reaction to those stressors.
And CAMH has been doing some great work to promote mental health during COVID-19, from creating trainings and hubs. And I think you partnered with Cisco, right, to use their video chat platform to start to treat mental health patients virtually. Can you talk about what you all have done to support what you've just described as the need?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Cisco's been just a really incredible partner, even before this pandemic. Their president and CEO here in Canada, Rolla Dagger, and Chuck down in the US have been strong advocates for the power of technology to not just increase access to mental health services virtually, but really to improve the quality of mental health services as well. Our hospital, in terms of its response to the pandemic, has really been focused on continuity of services for people living with mental illness. I had mentioned that we see over 40,000 patients a year. And making sure that those patients continue to gain access to mental health care virtually where possible has been a primary focus of what our healthcare workers have been working on. So since the pandemic, the hospital CAMH has drastically increased the number of visits it can offer to patients during the pandemic. Last year, the hospital provided virtual care to over 3,000 patients from 550 communities across our province. And from March to April in this year alone, CAMH had increased its virtual care visits from 350 per month to 3,000 per month, so an increase of over 750%. And that's not easy to do. It took CAMH training upwards of 400 doctors from 50 in February to deliver over 1,500 more virtual care visits in April. And I think what we've been seeing from our patients, or what we've been hearing and what I've been hearing from our doctors and frontline healthcare providers, is that These patients have more flexibility scheduling appointments and follow-ups. They have shorter wait times. They have seamless communication with clinicians and the ability to really receive care in a secure manner, no matter where they live. So, you know, and what I would also probably say is that the expansion of these telemental health services since the start of the pandemic builds on CAMH's longstanding record as a leader in this area. So we had strong groundwork in place. This pandemic really accelerated the work that their hospital was doing, and it was really enabled by Cisco, by Rola's leadership, and the services that they've been able to provide to CAMH. So really grateful on that front.
And what do you think the role that stigma plays? I think mental health in general has suffered from a stigma that physical and other health issues have not. And as I've been thinking about just my own exposure and experience over the past couple of months, some of the stigmas that we had before this all happened are starting to wear away. You know, it's like not uncommon to be in casual clothes on a Zoom call and to have your dogs and your kids and your husband and background noise. And that was something that, you know, wasn't as quote unquote acceptable even just a couple of weeks or months ago. And now it's just everyone's normal. And another part of everyone's normal has been that everyone has been impacted by this, right? Like people did deal with it in different ways, but it has provided some level of stress and anxiety in everyone's life. And so curious if you think this could potentially be something that destigmatizes mental health or whether you're really seeing the impacts of it in the same ways.
Yeah, I think that's a fascinating perspective. And this pandemic has really served to at least ground my thinking. You know, I am a passionate advocate for mental health and the reduction of stigma and you know, general inclusion for people who have suffered from mental illness throughout their lives or who have been affected by it indirectly as well. In 2018, CAMH launched a campaign that was called Mental Health is Health. And that campaign was really focused on reducing the gap that we knew through research between how people prioritized their physical health versus how people prioritized their mental health. So 1 in 5 people have a mental illness. By the time we reach the age of 40, 1 in 2 of us have had or will have had a mental illness. So mental illness affects us all, whether it's directly or indirectly. Yet what we saw in our research is that 90%+ of people prioritize their physical health, only 2% of people really prioritize their mental health. And so in part, you know, reflecting on before this pandemic, I really, in some ways, was living in a bit of a bubble. You know, I believed that mental health was health and almost believed that everybody else believed that mental health was health. My networks, my immediate networks of people were also as passionate about this cause as I was. But maybe I'll take this point, which I think was, you know, a tough thing for our healthcare workers to feel. We've seen the videos of the public and communities rallying around general hospitals as they responded to the COVID-19 pandemic. And our healthcare workers were doing the same thing. They were implementing their pandemic procedures, you know, literally dusting off that playbook, putting in place active screening. They were seeing a number of their patients being diagnosed with COVID-19, a number of staff members also being diagnosed with COVID-19. In 2 cases, we had 2 patients who died by COVID-19, but they weren't feeling the support from the communities like they were seeing at other general hospitals. And so it really brought up these deep feelings of stigma and how, you know, we as a society still don't view mental health as being as important as physical health. And so the foundation and a number of people at our hospital, including the CAMH CARES team, went into action and reached out to local partners in the community to see if they could lend support. And it was just so heartwarming to know that all we had to do was ask. And since then, our staff have been, you know, receiving warm meals from local restaurants like Sugo or big organizations like Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. We've had donations of hand cream from Shoppers Drug Mart. We've had donations of hand soap from Unilever and Dove. We've really seen a rallying around our mental health community and support for our mental health community. So I think that's been really great. But I do think, you know, that more people are prioritizing their mental health or understanding the impacts that this pandemic is having on their mental health. And you know, I would finish maybe by saying this. People who are fortunate enough to have good mental health are now feeling the impacts of isolation and loneliness and how quickly that can, or how that can exacerbate our mental illnesses or have a decline in our mental health. Our patients have felt that for years and years and years, right? People living with mental illness feel isolation and loneliness every day. There is such a stigma still attached to these diseases that society hadn't come to terms with. And I think maybe if we're looking for a silver lining in all this, people will better understand the impact that loneliness and isolation can have on people's mental health.
Because there's now just a different level of empathy for it and understanding of it. And I just as someone who is managing people, it has become part of my daily experience, right? Like if folks are struggling to be productive and folks are struggling to decrease their anxiety and their stress because there are so many unknown factors. And it's something that, you know, again, people deal with in different ways and not to my knowledge, don't have anyone who has been quote unquote diagnosed, right? But it's just a daily part of our lives in a way that it didn't have to be if you weren't dealing with it or had a family member who's dealing with mental illness before. And so I do think that there could be a silver lining, but to your point, there's just a level of education and awareness that we still need to do. And it's great to hear the work that you're all doing on that front.
Yeah, we to help raise awareness of this issue, but also to help raise awareness of the resources that CAMH is putting out to help support people's mental health. We've also launched a campaign called Apart Not Alone, and you may have seen our ads in print or on social media or on the television, but it's really to let people know that, you know, although we may be apart, we aren't alone. And if you need help, help is available. Go to CAMH.ca and check out those resources that can help you build resiliency and cope during this time.
So tell me, part of what we try to do on this podcast for our listeners is to share how the leaders in this space have gotten to where they are. And you're clearly in a role that is aligned with your skills and is doing a lot of good in the world. Tell us about your trajectory, how you got there.
You know, it's not a conventional path. Interestingly, I don't think anybody before started out saying, you know, I want to work in for a foundation and raise money to help advance a social cause or a social issue like mental health. I surely didn't. You know, I went to university, thought I was going to be a doctor, decided to go into business instead, and worked in the educational technology sector for the first half of my career. And I enjoyed it. I loved business building. I loved changing the way the world worked and learned through technology. I thought that was absolutely fascinating. I had the privilege to work under the president and CEO of that company who put social impact at the forefront of that company. As my career had matured in that industry, I started to realize that, you know, I was probably one or two degrees too removed from the front line of social impact and from helping, you know, vulnerable communities really have the resources and the supports that they need to live fulfilling lives. And so I pivoted into the nonprofit and charitable sector for the last half of my career. And it's been really incredible to work in support of those frontline workers who are making a difference every single day in people's lives. The first part of my career, I worked in affordable housing, and the last part of my career, I worked in the mental health sector. And you know what drew me to the mental health sector, well, to both sectors actually, you know, has a lot to do with that the global issue and wanting to feel really closely connected to a major issue where I could make major headway, or at least help make major headway. I'd say, you know, my draw to this organization in particular is a bit more personal. Like I said, we've all been affected by mental illness, whether directly or indirectly. I would be no different. You know, lost my grandfather. He was an alcoholic, and lost him. He had psoriasis of the liver, and lost him due to his alcoholism. My grandmother had dementia and also mental illnesses on the other side, on the maternal side of my family. So seeing how mental illness had impacted the people I love, both directly and indirectly, really inspired me to get involved with an organization like CAMH and help them raise the money they need to create a better future for people living with mental illness. And I consider it a privilege to do what I do every day and to be able to support the smartest people I've ever met in their research and in their clinical practices.
So if folks who are listening today are struggling with some of the issues that you're talking about, you mentioned a couple of resources, where would you point them? Where would the first place they should go?
I would recommend going to CAMH.ca. You'll see our mental health and COVID-19 resource hub online there. We've had tons and tons, hundreds of thousands of people go there and access really great self-assessment tools or download guides. You know, one that I've found particularly helpful is having tough conversations, but also having conversations about this pandemic with your children and with your family. As a part of that resource hub, we've actually also launched resources to support healthcare workers through this pandemic too. So there are virtual training programs. Right now they're running twice weekly, but we also have a number of tools and resources that really help healthcare workers manage their mental health and self-care through this pandemic. And just to pick up on the conversation that we had about Cisco and how their technology has enabled CAMH to increase its virtual mental health service capacity. There are also resources online for healthcare workers to help them build their virtual mental health capacity, including best practices. I would encourage them to seek out research-informed information if they're looking for ways to cope and build their resiliency. And all of the resources on CAMH's COVID-19 and Mental Health Resource Hub are research-informed and evidence-based resources.
The question I usually ask guests is, what is the best part of your day? And before we hit record, you were telling me how much your day has changed since this all has taken place. So curious what the best new part of your day is now that you're home and looking after twin 3.5-year-olds, which I don't know how how you do that and how you sound coherent, having young ones myself. What's a bright spot in your day, right?
I have an amazing husband. I have amazing children. I have amazing dogs. And I get to eat every single meal with them right now, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And that wasn't the case before, right? I was often calling home saying, eat without me because I'm going to be, you know, home a little bit later than I had anticipated. And I think that's been really helpful for my children. You know, just I think of Dr. Goldblum, who's one of the psychiatrist at CAMH and a leader at our hospital. And I listened to him talk about mental health a long time ago. And somebody asked, what's one tip that you can give me for helping build resiliency in my children? And his advice was, have dinner with them every day, have dinner as a family. And so it's been really great to be able to do that every single day.
Well, thank you so much, Chris, for sharing a little bit about CAMH and your work and your background. It's just been enlightening. And we'll share out with our listeners the resources that you mentioned when this podcast comes out. Thank you for shedding light on this really important issue.
Well, Danielle, thank you for having me. It was a privilege speaking with you. I hope you found it valuable.
Thanks so much for listening to Pro Bono Perspectives today. If you like our show and want to learn more, check out our website at commonimpact.org. Leave us a review and tell your friends and colleagues about us. Tune in to our upcoming episodes to hear from everyday leaders using their skills to help their communities.